the most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home.
I was just talking to Andrew Ferguson, who's sitting in the studio with me today and sort of co-hosting.
Howdy there, folks.
Sort of co-hosting or co-hosting? What do we want to call it?
I have no idea. Whatever you're more comfortable with, I think.
Okay, well, but today we'll call it sort of co-hosting.
Okay.
If it becomes a regular guest co-host.
Guest co-host. That's nice. That's
okay.
A happy medium, I think.
A guest co-host. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. It is Monday the 23rd. I always mean to say that, and I usually forget. Okay, before I go into my usual spiel, I was making a salad last night. And, you know, this is the season for cooking. You've got, we're already past Thanksgiving, we're coming up to Christmas and pre-Christmas and parties. And you see, like, the Ginzu knife things. You know, it's like, well, this is so sharp. Look how it slices through a tomato skin. I got to tell you, tomato skin is one of the most dangerous things to slice without hurting yourself. You know, there's an old story, an old anecdote, really, that it's easier to hurt yourself with a dull knife than a sharp knife. And the reason is you apply more pressure to a dull knife, so it'll either cut what you're cutting or it'll cut you when it slips. So if you're going to cut something like a tomato or an eggplant, anything that offers any resistance to an imperfectly sharp knife, what I have found, is, and I've done this for years, so it's like now I'm imparting it to the radio ether, use a bread knife or some heavily serrated knife. And then the sharpness is not so much an issue. You can just hold it in a way that keeps your hands out of the way, and those serrations will cut right through that very fragile, slippery skin, and you'll still have all your fingertips. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. If you want to call in about it, that's fine, but that's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know, this is important information, especially for me, a college student who's so afraid of turning on an oven because I'm afraid I might burn down my house, that I've never actually cooked anything. So, you know, this is important information for the public to know.
It sounds funny and frivolous and off topic, but actually, I once knew a guy when I was working at a store who, in the process of cooking, had sliced his thumb so badly that he had cut the tendon, and he was in a cast for like 6 months.
Wow.
Because he had slipped with a knife. So, I mean, this is like a stupid thing to do on a show that's mostly politics and social issues, but to me, public safety is a social issue. So I think we can stretch the definition a little bit. I do want to point out my usual voting stuff. There is an election coming up for state legislator in a couple of districts. I think it's January 14th because I didn't write it down, but I'm pretty sure it's January 14th. I have already got my early voting ballot. So if you haven't, you should if you're getting one. And if you don't get an early voting ballot, go to harrisvotes.com so that you can find out what the election places are, early voting, and all that stuff. You can actually, I used to have all that stuff on the front of my page, and it was taking too long to get down my blog, so now there's a link to the page that has all that stuff. So just go to that, thinkwingradio.com. Just go to today's job post. Actually, I didn't do today's, but you can go to the last one, because it's always there. I forgot to post my blog for the show.
Oh, no, Mike.
I'll do that when I get home. I apologize to anyone who wants to follow along. Okay. Getting to local. Well, actually, this isn't local. This has to do with the Democratic debate. They did this thing about the wine cave and the fundraiser. And I'm not going to defend either side for this particular issue, but I will just read a little bit of an article called Democrats Sparred Over a Wine Cave Fundraiser and Its Billionaire Owner Isn't Pleased. And this is from the New York Times, December 20th. When I post the show, the link will be there. So the $900 bottles of wine, there's a thing about that, because those are not like 750-ml bottles of wine, which wasn't touched upon, was not made clear. We're talking about fairness here, okay, in terms of accuracy of information. The information was incomplete. The owner explains that they do not sell a regular-sized $900 bottle of wine. The $900 bottle that they do sell is actually 3 liters, which is the equivalent of 6 standard bottles of wine. So he said, at most, if you were to break it down to a 750-ml bottle, normal size, $45 to $65 a bottle for wine, which is more than I spend because, thank God, I have cheap taste, but is within the realm of what, say, the top 20 or 30% of earners probably occasionally spend on wine. Also, this particular donor in the article says that he is the most liberal of all his rich friends, and he donates to a lot of causes, and he donates to a lot of political, Democratic political campaigns, and he was really kind of annoyed. It doesn't mention whether he also donates to Republican campaigns or which he donates more to, if he donates to both. The article doesn't touch on any of that, which is why I'm not taking any sides. He does say that he donated $2.4 million to Democratic candidates and PACs since the 1980s. Not according to him, actually, according to Federal Election Commission records. So the journalist did some research on this. And, I mean, there's a lot more. I have like a page and a half excerpted. And you will be able to see what I have excerpted and link to the article when I have remembered to post it to my blog. Sorry about that. Okay, by the way, this is a call-in show, actually. So let me give you the number for those who don't know it. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Now, I personally am choosing not to bring up the impeachment. However, you are free to do so, and I will be happy to discuss it. I just feel that it's being discussed widely enough that it's not something I need to do here. Now, what I do want to talk about a little is that there is a federal judge, U.S. District Judge Lee Yeakel, is how I'm thinking to pronounce the name, dismissed the Houston ISD lawsuit seeking to avoid a state TEA takeover. He rejected the HISD's argument that ousting the Houston School Board would disenfranchise voters. So the way this is from the Texas Tribune from the 19th, and the way this is reading is that he handed a win to TEA officials, Texas Educational, what do they call it?
Texas Education Agency, I think.
Agency, thank you very much. That's why we have you here.
I'm glad to be of some use, at least.
There you go. I mean, everyone wants to be useful. That's kind of a normal human basic need. And I know this is off topic because when I have someone else to talk to, I can digress like nobody's business. I actually believe that one of the very first things that a young child learns to say, and I think this is significant to human nature, that's not fair. I think that very young children have an innate sense of fairness that they learn very, very early what is fair and what is not. And it is when they get older that they realize that the world is not fair, but that doesn't mean they can't fight for fairness, and some of them will. So anyway, getting back to this, the lawsuit was one of the last weapons that HISD had in what they're calling in the article a near inevitable state takeover in the making. The final judgment of U.S. District Judge Lee Yeakel denied HISD's request for a preliminary injunction. He also remanded to state court some of the district's claims that had exceeded his authority as he moved toward a takeover. Let's see. There's other stuff. He said the district did not have standing to bring its voting and civil rights actions on behalf of its voters. Standing is a thing in court. It's very, very, it's a tough, tough mountain to climb to have standing to bring a case like this. He further concludes there is not a substantial likelihood of success on the merits for any of HISD's federal claims. So there's that. Now, there's another judge who has decided, and this is again from the Texas Tribune on December 18th, that the individual mandate in the ACA is unconstitutional. A federal appellate court ruled this in Texas in an ACA lawsuit. A panel on the conservative leaning, you know, it's worth noting that 25% now, 25% of our federal judges have been appointed by Trump and ratified by Mitch McConnell and his right-wing Republican Senate. So they deferred all of these judge openings during Obama, including a Supreme Court justice. All of these were blocked by McConnell so that he could do this, in spite of the fact that the majority of people the majority of people tend to vote Republican. The plurality of Americans self-identify as Democrat. A majority are either Democratic or Independent. But McConnell will basically ram, and with Trump, will basically ram this stuff through. If you remember, I think it was Grover Norquist, the anti-tax guy, who once said, all we need is a hand to sign the bills. We don't need a president who has real policies or leadership. We just need for the Congress to pass stuff and have a presidential hand that will sign our bills for us. And that's pretty much where we are now. Boy, if I drift from this microphone, I change the volume considerably. I think I need a headset. Okay, we actually have a caller. Scott, can we pick up? Scott, you're on the air. How you doing?
HISD suit is a federal suit.
Well, apparently they tried going in a federal direction. When you talk about discrimination of minorities, that becomes a civil rights act suit. Apparently they have state suits going as well.
Yeah. Well, I am positive that the U.S. Constitution does not spell out that school boards must be elected. Although you might be able to base a case on equal protection, perhaps.
Well,
it's not a clear-cut case.
Well, I think the problem is, and I go back to my experience when I was a young student in New York, where they had the State Board of Education, which was basically a technocratic board, and it was statewide. And eventually they, because of public uprisings in the 60s and 70s, they eventually started doing local elected school boards. I actually think that that's a horrible idea. But the other side of the coin is, if you're going to have politically biased, non-technocratic leadership in your schools, they should reflect, the values of your school district, and B, of course, should be technically competent as educational technocrats. But in this case, we're really talking about two political bodies that are controlling education. We've got the TEA at the state level, which is appointed by the governor and is extremely overall right-wing and likes to change history to suit its perceptions. And then we have the elected board, which is politically elected, so they run for office, and they're running HISD and a number of other independent school districts, which I guess is why they're called independent school districts. So what we have is really two political entities fighting over the shape of education, whether it's going to be state-dominated or it's going to be locally dominated. Now, note that Republicans, who are all for small government, always want small government when it suits them, but when they are in power, they want to take over local control and make it state or big government control. So there's always this interesting little dichotomy, right?
And you have a Houston electorate that is, a lot of them don't seem to take a lot of interest in school board elections. They don't vote in them.
Houston, well,
Texas seem to think that it is a civic duty.
T- Texas has one of the worst turnouts of any state in the union. You know, it's not, I'm not sure if it's like a thank God for Alabama thing in this case, but or Mississippi for that matter. But yeah, we are very bad about turnouts. It is not culturally a thing in Texas, more so in Houston, I think, because we're more cosmopolitan. And until we can get turnouts for any election, no matter what it is, that exceed certainly 10%, hopefully 30%. I don't think there's an election that should get more than a 30%, less than a 30% turnout.
I think I have missed two or three elections in the last 50 years.
Do you get a mail-in ballot?
No.
That'll solve your problem.
I go vote early in person.
Are you over 65?
Yes.
Okay, all you have to do is go to harrisvotes.com. You can get a request, you can fill out a form, you can mail it in, and from then on, you do that at the end of every year, and you will never have to go to a polling place again. They will send you a ballot.
Now, Mike, is that mail-in ballot available for everybody, or do you have to have a certain requirement?
There are certain requirements. Anyone over 65 can request, or I should say, anyone 65 or over can request a mail-in ballot, no questions asked. You request it, you fill out the form that's online, you have to mail it in. You can't email it or fax it. You can if it makes you feel good, but it won't count. You have to mail it, and you just do that every year around December.
Polling place.
I'm sorry?
I said I would rather see what's going on at the polling place
than
go vote in person.
If you have a mail-in ballot and choose to go to a polling place, you must bring the ballot with you so they can spoil it, so they know you are not voting twice.
I do not apply for mail-in ballots.
Now, but to answer Andrew's question, 65 or older, going to be out of town or out of county or out of state during elections, like my wife spends the majority of her time in Brazos County because she's an associate professor at A&M, so she gets a mail-in ballot for Harris.
And during 2016, my family was living overseas, and we got a mail-in ballot for that.
Exactly. Also, if you have a disability, which of course then you have to have some kind of documentation or doctor's notes for. If you go to harrisvotes.com, you can actually see all of the qualifications. There are like a half a dozen or so things that will qualify you for a mail-in ballot, the simplest being you're 65 or older.
Well, I grew up hearing my parents say they voted in every election.
That's admirable, and we need more of that, and I do my best as well.
Well, I don't think they thought politics was optional. Their generation did not choose to have Japan attack Pearl Harbor.
Well, all right, let me get back to the point here. The point of a mail-in ballot to me, what I think should make it universal, is that we have so many little by-elections, elections that really they want to hide. You know, like this legislative, essentially emergency election to replace somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, January 14th, it's going to be the only thing on the ballot. And when you get a mail-in ballot, you cannot be surprised by a tiny little by-election. So there is that benefit.
I'm voting.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Scott. You take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. Next caller is MOD. MOD, hi. What do you got? Keep it succinct.
Hello.
Hello.
Man, it's a beautiful day out there, guys. I'm glad you all are working.
It sure is a beautiful day out there, MOD.
I'm an air conditioning guy, basically. I don't do the outdoors.
Sure.
I admire the outdoors in theory from inside an air-conditioned car.
I'm very much the same way.
Yeah, there you go.
You guys need vitamin D.
I take 5,000 units a day.
Okay.
Because I don't go outside much. Anyway, let's get to the point. What are you calling about, MOD?
Well, I thought about what would have been, let's see. The impeachment proceeding, what past presidents should have been considered for impeachment
that,
proceedings?
That weren't?
That's my concept.
That weren't? Is that what you're saying? What presidents?
We should have considered for grounds for impeachment. That's it.
I think that Warren Harding, who had a very corrupt administration, but he died of a heart attack, so I guess impeachment was not much of an option. That's how we got Calvin Coolidge. Considered for impeachment. My history is a little vague. I think that Andrew Jackson might have had some grounds to be impeached.
Hell, they tried impeaching him several times, actually.
Did they?
Oh, yeah. It was primarily because of his, you know, dislike for the financial and not that.
Well, not to mention the fact that...
He killed a bunch of Indians, which I think was horrific.
He did some Indian slaughter. He did some illegal annexation of territory. He did some really, really bad things. And I remember in the history books, and this was in New York, I remember, you know, they try not to be partisan. They try to find the positive in various presidents. He did some horrible, horrible things and arguably was a mass murderer.
Right. He was a mass murderer. So here's my list. Let's go back. Let's say 60s. Let me see where should I start.
All right. Well, start something short. Because
well, I mean,
it's already
I'm,
been.
I'm gonna give you a list here. You ready?
Okay, ready.
All right, let's start with LBJ.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think one of the great presidents, if not for the Vietnam War, that will always sully his reputation. But he did great things.
Okay, so I heard the audio like 5 years ago when McNamara was talking to the Admiral of the Atlantic Fleet that received a phone call from a Russian U-boat. Saying that there's like been a 2+ hour campaign of these MiGs bombing this communication U.S. Missile that was basically the USS Liberty.
I don't understand what you're saying, partly because it's disorganized and partly because your connection is poor.
I would say when Baines Johnson said, I want that God blanket boat on the bottom of the ocean when the USS Liberty was being bombed by Israel MiGs for 2+ hours.
Okay, so now we're going to what? The 67 war.
Yeah, that's right. This was supposed to be the false flag to go into the Cairo and Israel war. That's right. But it didn't happen. That didn't cause it. But that was going to be the reason for that war in 67. And then the second one I would say would be a good grounds for consideration impeachment would have been the austerity economics that were Milton Friedman's that Nixon used with the CIA on Chile.
So, Nixon would have been impeached if he hadn't resigned.
So,
Trump
I mean,
would
the,
not
the
have
push,
been
the push
Trump would not
of,
Trump hello Trump would not have been impeached if he had resigned.
Okay, so I'm just saying outside of the known Watergate, I'm saying the CIA collaboration to take Allende out of Chile, which was fostered that Nixon backed, was privatization of Social Security.
Well, but Nixon was forced out of office. He did actually a lot of progressive things, but Nixon was forced out of office for crimes.
I think we should consider.
I think we need to do that in a separate phone call because
if you just let me talk through it, man, I'd be done in 2 minutes.
1 minute.
Mike, come on, man.
No, man.
It's almost been 5 minutes, Rod.
Yeah, it's been 5 minutes. One more minute,
Mike.
And I feel I'm being more than fair.
Okay, so let me get this out. So Carter, after Ford went to Indonesia, Christmas the following year when Carter came into office, it was East Timor, and the books and Wikipedia says several hundred thousand, but it's the genocide of East Timor. You know where East Timor is?
I do.
Yes. It's
around Indonesia, Australia.
Yeah, right above, right in the middle. That's right. So the genocide of East Timor, which was run by Helms, the CIA director, and he died a couple of years ago just recently, but the genocide of East Timor underneath 1977 when it came in for like 400 or 650,000 East Timors were genocided by the CIA and underneath Carter's administration. Here we go to Reagan. You ready for Reagan?
30 seconds.
How about the trickle-down economics? South Chicago privatization that really started taking a foot, I would say that would be the modest. How about Poppy Bush's Pentagon Papers? How about Poppy Bush's...
All right, so what you're saying is that every president of the latter part of the 20th century should have been impeached.
How about when Poppy Bush's son, Neil...
Okay.
That's 6 minutes, M.O.D.
Yeah, M.O.D.
Gotta
let you go. I'm sorry, but I thank you for calling. Take care. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. The call-in number, and Well, I mean, I guess the other stuff that I have to get to, I can get to next week if the calls end up coming in. So don't be afraid to call 713-526-5738. Next caller up is Kobe. Kobe.
Hey.
Hey. What's going on? You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling again about the impeachment that's coming up.
Okay.
And I know that one of the big unknowns right now is the witnesses on
yes.
both sides.
Having witnesses at all.
Exactly. Now, the Democrats, I'm sure, would like to give witness testimony from, say, Giuliani or Trump or Mulvaney. And I'm sure that the Republicans would love to hear from the Bidens.
The Bidens are not relevant to this. Whatever you think they may or may not have done, it is a sideshow.
Oh, absolutely.
They are not relevant. It's a false equivalence. The Bidens have nothing to do with the reasons why Trump was impeached.
It's misdirection.
It's a misdirection.
And you think that's the witnesses that the Republicans are going to try and bring to the stand?
I wouldn't rule it out. I think that's what they're going to try and do is sully the whole thing and make the Bidens look bad.
Well, and, you know, the Chief Justice, who is supposed to preside, and I think that's an important word, preside over the Senate trial. From what I understand, usually that's a very ceremonial job, the Chief Justice presiding over an impeachment trial in the Senate is not terribly proactive. They kind of let the political process take its direction. But I think that if a Supreme Court justice is going to preside over a trial, he should be willing to take an objection about whether a witness is relevant. And if that were to be the case, and if the Supreme Court Chief Justice was fair, I know it's a stretch, but if he was fair, then I think it would be reasonable for him to allow or disallow relevant witnesses. That would be something that might be worth seeing.
I have my fingers crossed for that.
Thank you. So you like the idea. I appreciate that. Anything else, Kobe?
No, that's it.
I appreciate your call as always. You take care.
Thank you.
All right, next up is Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. Great. Hey. Great show today.
Thank you. I haven't even gotten to the half of it. go ahead.
Well, this you're wrong. This impeachment is 100% about the Bidens.
How so? Were the Bidens on that phone call to Ukraine? Did the Bidens talk to Zelensky? Did the Bidens try to turn government mandated, I use the word mandated by Congress, assistance to Ukraine in order to obtain personal political objectives? The Bidens have nothing to do with this. They are a sideshow distraction that the Republicans keep bringing up.
Well,
it's like saying, what about Jack the Ripper? You know,
$100,000 a month from this company called Burisma.
Then what you need to do is... Then what you need to do is a separate investigation of the Bidens and see if there are any laws that the Bidens broke. And then if they deserve to be indicted, indict them. And if they did a felony or a misdemeanor, convict them. But they have absolutely nothing to do with this. They are totally a distraction. It's like squirrel, squirrel, squirrel.
No, I think the problem is that Trump is over the target and everyone knows it. So we have to go for this fake impeachment.
Well, I think, of course, Trump's over the target because whoever the president is
Trump
over the target.
Trump is the target because he broke the law.
Sure.
He abused power.
The point of being the leader of the U.S. government is being the person who is ultimately responsible for whoever below you has done, if they've done anything. But in this case,
and to protect
Trump
and
himself,
defend the Constitution.
And to protect and defend the Constitution. But in this case, Trump himself is the person who's done the wrongdoing.
Well, Trump didn't take any money from Ukraine. Biden did. Pelosi's son did.
But again, totally separate. That's like the impeachment, Jack the Ripper. You know, hey, look at Jack the Ripper over there. They're totally, totally unrelated things.
If you want to have a conversation about whether, you know, Biden has done something wrong, which he may have, to be honest, I don't know. But if you want to have that conversation, that should be at a separate time. That should be a different conversation.
So why can't Pelosi give the articles to the Senate?
Well, because the Senate doesn't want to have a fair trial. The Senate wants to just take the No, I mean, they don't. They don't want They don't want They don't want No, you see, but the problem is that the Republicans didn't investigate Trump. And the Senate, the Republican Senate barely investigated Trump. So the House had to do essentially the job of a grand jury. And when you have a grand jury, people from that have been auditioned, essentially, that have been interviewed by the grand jury, they do get to testify at trial as to what they told the grand jury that is either indicting or clearing the defendant. The Senate doesn't want any documents. I mean, everything that has been an open testimony, all documents that have been presented are damning. Even the Republican appointees are saying, no, this wasn't right. This wasn't right. You know, we're going on unsecured phones. We're extorting. And remember, bribery doesn't have to be successful to be a crime. That's why attempted bribery is a crime. Extortion doesn't have to work to be a crime. That's why you have attempted extortion. Those are all crimes.
Well, you can keep moving the goalposts, but the only one took money from Ukraine was Biden.
And the only one who withheld money from Ukraine was Trump.
But Biden,
donor to the Clinton Foundation.
What Biden did has nothing to do with what Trump was impeached for. It is a sideshow. It is a false equivalence. It's people saying, no, don't look over here. Look over there. There's a squirrel. There's a squirrel. Look, look, squirrel.
That's why the impeachment is over and it stopped and Nancy won't move forward with it.
Oh, Nancy will move forward with it. And one way or the other, Trump is impeached. And I think that the public sentiment, even among Republicans, I think 69% of Republicans in one poll feel that there should be witnesses and there should be documents. So, you know, there should be a fair trial. And when there's a fair trial, then Nancy will send it over.
And I'm sure a considerable number of those 69% of Republicans feel that there should be a trial, because if there were to be a trial, they think Trump would win. And they think that would be the easiest way to clear him of this stuff.
Exactly.
Well, maybe after the election, they'll go ahead and pass it on to the Senate.
Well, you know, one thing that I believe fervently, you know, I put forward ideas. I put forward information that I believe to be true. I try to be accurate. I don't expect to convert anybody that I talk to on the air while we're on the air. So all I'm doing is throwing out stuff. Maybe you'll think about it. Maybe somebody else will think about it. We right now may agree to disagree. But as long as we've had the discussion,
The money. Follow the money.
I do want to say that you mentioned that she'll, you know, bring the articles forward after the election. And in that way, you're kind of...
Did we say that?
He said that.
Okay.
He said that. And I think that you're sort of... You're trying to bring this into the context of the election, saying that it's a strategy to try and
If it's deferred long enough, it becomes literally part of the election.
Right, right. That ultimately, I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the message you're trying to get out with that is that the reason that this impeachment is going forward is more to do with raising the public's opinion of the Democrats against the Republicans to try and win the election. And I want to say, I could see that happening. I could see that being the main reason behind it. But I don't think that we can, you know, run with that until we know for certain whether that's the case.
And frankly, I don't think that there is a problem given the amount of suppression. I mean, suppression is kind of like a Republican thing. Given the amount of suppression of information that the Republicans have attempted, the Putin talking points, the dismissal of testimony. I think given that, you know, for the Democrats to take time to make sure that all of this information that even the Trump appointees have testified to let that kind of percolate out, I think that's a perfectly reasonable strategy in order to push McConnell to have an actual trial.
Yeah, well, they don't have the media on your side, on their side, fake news.
Well, you know, fake news, even Trump has said, is any news he doesn't like. He has said that in so many words. Anyway, I got to let you go, Jeff, but I do appreciate your call.
All right.
Thank you so much. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. The number is 713-526-5738. It is open forum. You can call about anything that's on your mind. It doesn't have to be about something that I've talked about. A topic that I think is interesting, there is a lawsuit, lots of lawsuits. This is from December 18th, the Texas Tribune. I think I started to talk about this, that the individual mandate was ruled unconstitutional by a federal appellate court in a Texas-led ACA lawsuit. A panel on the conservative-leaning U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals sent the lawsuit back to a district court in Texas to reassess how much of the Affordable Care Act can stand if the individual mandate must fall. Deep down in the article, there is this remark, and this actually is really interesting. This entire case, everything that's been in court about the Affordable Care Act, actually turns on the question of severability. Does ruling one particular portion of the ACA unconstitutional or illegal, does that basically disable the entire act? The reason it's interesting is because normally, as a matter of routine, a sentence is included in pretty much every bill that says if any part of this is ruled unconstitutional, it is severable and the rest of the law will apply. It was not put in this bill. It was an oversight. That line never made it into this bill. And that has been giving ammunition to the people trying to destroy the ACA that, hey, look, the bill didn't say that any of this was severable. So if any of this is unconstitutional, then all of it should be unconstitutional. That has been the essence of all the arguments. And so far, they haven't been able to pull that off. But that's what this is about. So, I'll tell you what. We have a caller. Steve, you're on the air. How you doing? Steve.
Good.
Hey.
Yes. Yes, sir. Good. 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 Good.
What's going on?
About the ACISD stuff going on. It's like, what's your opinion on why this is happening and what's going on with that?
Well, apparently, from what I understand, there is a Texas law that was passed by the legislature within the last several years. That requires school districts on the whole, and as well as specific schools, to meet certain specific success goals, quote unquote, success. And there are one or two schools in HISD that have not been able to make that cut. And apparently they've gotten a certain amount of forgiveness for several years, and now the Texas Education Agency, the TEA, which is a very conservative-leaning governor-appointed board, has decided to, and I'm going to use, I suppose, biased language here, has decided to take over HISD in order to, quote-unquote, improve its performance. Now, to me, when I hear state takeover, my first thought jumps to the state of Michigan, where they have the emergency managers who, in the case of Detroit, wanted to sell off museum legacy items. And, of course, in Flint, Michigan, poisoned the water because of their incompetence and indifference to the technology of shifting the water supply.
I believe they still don't have clean water, by the way.
They still do not have clean water. It's a complicated thing having to do with once it's done, and the scale and the pipes and all this stuff. I'm not going to go into it. You can look it up. But that's what I think of when I hear state takeover. I think of emergency managers in Michigan, where elected officials are basically pushed out of the equation, and it's the closest thing to a dictatorship we can have in the United States.
What I'm hearing from my wife and other teachers in districts here in the Houston area, is like we're dictated that it is a certain number of blacks and Hispanics. It's like once you cross a certain number in your school. Once those people are
majority minority
to a certain amount, then you've crossed the line.
I'm sorry, disciplined?
And there's zero...
I'm sorry, hold on a second, Steve. You're saying when they're disciplined to a certain amount? Is that the word you used?
They get in trouble.
No.
I mean, to a certain amount, it's like, but if you have a certain population of your school that's disciplined, that's this minority or that minority, then your school is flagged, according to Texas. Not taking into account that's your entire population of that school.
I think, I'm not going to argue whether or not that's a factor. I have not heard that is a factor, but that doesn't mean it's not. What I have heard is that this is strictly an academic decision. It's an academic rating. You know, they have these state tests, and you have to get certain scores, both individually and as a district, on these tests. And there are certain schools in HISD that are not passing these tests.
North Shore was one of them, I think.
I've heard of North Shore, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, I can't remember the name of the high school, but there's a high school not too far from me that also, as I recall, has not been passing the test. But the question is whether a state takeover is a net benefit or a net loss, or if it's just fascism, just dictatorship, tyranny.
I'm remembering the before this happened, there was a HISD board meeting, and they were basically, I'm going to sound racist as hell. It was an argument whether it's going to be Hispanic or black. And I think that's
whether Watt was Hispanic or black?
The superintendent.
Well, I mean, you know, let's talk reality here. As a white person, as an old white Jewish guy from New York, no matter how much I try to wrap my head with the best of faith, no matter how much I try to wrap my head against a minority experience, the only minority experience I have is being Jewish. I do have that experience. I can only try intellectually to understand the experience and passed down cultural history, really, of an African American or a Hispanic American or a Native American. I can try intellectually to understand that stuff, but I can't be in their heads, and neither can you.
So let me just get back
to your point. So when you talk about wanting to have a head of HISD who is black or Hispanic or white or Jewish or Native American, you know, on the one hand, it sounds racist, but what you're really talking about is, will this leader have enough understanding of the experience of the majority of people of culture in this school? I'm going to say culture, not race, so that they may have the best chance of enhancing performance, understanding where these students' heads are. I don't think it's unreasonable, and it doesn't have to be racist.
And empathizing with those students and understanding their needs is ultimately, which is why having an educational staff of a single race when the majority of the students in that school are a different race.
It's like talking about women's health when you have a panel that's all old white men.
Exactly. And that's something that happens.
That's something that happens. So, I'm sorry, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, the one name that's coming up in my mind is like, I mean when this happened, he already turned it down, was Saavedra. Now, he came from South Texas, and look up why he left South Texas sometime when you're bored. And pretty interesting why he got fired down there, and then he was head of HISD for a while. And
they get golden parachutes, and it's really
they
aggravating.
They almost brought him back, and they decided to not go that route.
Okay, I'll tell you, Steve, I'm going to have to move on. I appreciate your call. You made some interesting points and caused some interesting discussion. I always appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. You take care.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. You can help support KPFT by going to kpft.org and hitting the donate link. We run entirely on community support. So if you have donated in the past and you can find your way clear to donate again, that would be great. If you have never donated, this would be a good time. And I would also point out that only about 8 to 12% of listeners have ever contributed to the station. I'm not trying to tell you if you don't pay, don't listen. I'm not saying that. We want you to listen. All we're asking, and I mean this is what other public media do. All we're asking is if you feel you get something from KPFT, if you get something from Think Wing Radio or any other show on KPFT, give us a hand.
If we matter to you.
Yeah,
send
a few bucks. We're not proud. It doesn't have to be a lot. It can be a lot, but it doesn't have to be a lot. So thank you very much. And then thinkwingradio.com is my site. At Thinkwing Radio is where you find me on Twitter. And Thinkwing Radio with Mike Koenig is where you find me on Facebook. I am terribly unoriginal. Okay, Gary,
yes,
you're
hi.
On the air. Thank you for calling.
Sure,
what's up?
Hi. Hi. I was just wondering, I listened to this gentleman that was kept saying follow the money, the money when it comes to the Bidens. And I read a report earlier today or yesterday that Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner made at least or somewhere around $135 million last year.
Biden is a metaphorical squirrel
for the
congressional metaphorical dog.
And why don't people who are all worked up about Biden have any concern about what's going on with Ivanka and Jared?
Because they don't want to see bad in Trump. Everything about Trump, for some reason, is excused. And actually, there's like a whole article I'm not going to get to today about why these people are following Trump. But it's not so time-sensitive I can't do it next
sure,
week.
Sure. It just seems to me that it's not even a comparison. I mean,
no, it isn't. It's not even close. And again, it's separate. It's like Jack the Ripper versus impeachment.
And I mean, the reason they're not concerned with, you know, the incomes of the Trump family is that, in my view, politics in America is a team sport. And Trump is on their team. Everyone in his family is on their team. They don't want to find wrongdoing among their team members.
Well,
so they're not really concerned with keeping people honest. And to be honest, I don't think the Democrats are particularly concerned with keeping people honest either, as long as it works for them.
Well,
but that's my opinion.
Yeah, sure. We have to be clear here, because what can make this show interesting is I'm sort of a centrist, but the center has moved so far to the right that I'm more of a leftist.
Yeah.
Andrew is an honest-to-God lefty.
Yes, I am very far left,
so,
and I have no qualms about saying that.
Now, to be fair, we don't have a righty, but that's okay, because there are plenty of them in Houston.
Hey, so if you're out there and you want to be on this show, I mean, you can always drop by and put in a volunteer application.
You can, or just call the show.
Call the show, sure.
Anyway, Gary, I'm sorry. We've been interrupting you a lot, and I want to make sure you have a chance to make your point. Go ahead.
That's okay. No, I'm with you. I just didn't quite understand that. This seems to be...
It's a diversion.
Seems to be Biden is a rank amateur compared to what's going on with some of these other
and
people.
Whether or not he is or isn't...
It's not even relevant.
Yeah, it's not relevant.
Yeah.
And whether or not he has done something inappropriate...
Sure.
Is a separate legal issue.
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's not even connected.
Yeah. It's dog squirrel. Dog squirrel.
Yeah. And one other quick thing I had for you. You mentioned earlier, and maybe you could help me understand it. I think the Constitution says that the Chief Justice is the person that presides over the impeachment trial, not the majority leader.
Well, the majority leader manages essentially the, I guess in this case, it would be the defense. And the House manages the prosecution. And Nancy Pelosi's point, I think, you know, while it may be politically motivated in finding a reason, I think her point is perfectly valid. She needs to know what kind of case she is going to manage before she sends over people to manage it.
But wouldn't it be up to Roberts rather than McConnell as to who, whether or not witnesses testify and so on? Isn't it the Chief Justice that kind of presides over the impeachment trial?
I think it depends, you know, like during the Clinton testimony, it's like it depends on what the definition of is.
Yeah.
I think it depends on what the definition of preside is. if he presides over it as a judge,
right,
then he should be making rulings on what is acceptable evidence and who should be allowed to testify as witnesses.
Presides is the actual verb that's in the Constitution.
Preside, I believe, is the thing
that's actually
in the Constitution.
I'll have to look that up, but I think that's what I'm just not wanting. I don't want to cede any power to McConnell. I just
right.
want to make sure the Constitution's followed.
Well, you know,
but I understand the what the definition of presides could be.
I think if we still have a constitutional republic after Trump, then I think that there's a lot of legislation and a few constitutional amendments that are going to need to be put in place. And I think one of them should define the role of the Senate in a trial so it is not a political negotiation.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the norms and that we thought were...
We relied on the integrity of our representatives and our president.
Need to be codified.
Yeah, we relied on the integrity of our president, of our senators,
yeah.
of our House legislators, and what we have found is when you have people with no integrity, the system does not work.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So anyway.
Well, good. Well, thanks. I've enjoyed the show. Thanks.
Thank you,
Keep
Gary.
Up the good work, guys.
I appreciate your calling.
Sure.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We do have a few minutes. If someone wants to call, we can get in one, maybe two callers, 713-526-5738. So I can go on this a little bit, but I want to give Andrew a chance to say something if he has something he wants to say before I move on.
I don't really think I have anything particularly – I don't have any new issues to bring up, but, you know, going back to the impeachment for a second, I'm not really bothered. You know, I'm not really bothered enough to follow it, really, because I don't necessarily think there's a huge chance that Trump will get impeached he's already been impeached. I don't think there's a huge chance that he's going to get convicted and thrown out of office. And I'm not sure that it's going to have any major effects on the 2020 election either.
Here's the thing that puzzles me. I can't imagine why the Republicans would not prefer Pence as president. And I'm not saying he would be a good president, and I'm not saying I would like what he would do as president.
Of course not.
But in terms of basic administrative and executive competence, and in terms of managing our affairs overseas with our allies and adversaries, I think that he would be a better, quote-unquote, president.
Well,
he would be a normal bad president.
Yes, yeah. He would be somebody who is more willing to walk the party line, certainly, I think.
Walk the party line, what I'm thinking of in terms of walk the historic line that bipartisan presidents have walked in terms of our international relations.
Right.
In terms of our international policies.
Right.
And to some extent, the rule of law.
Right. Well, I mean...
And here's another thing that I didn't know that I learned recently. You know, after you have a president who dies or is forced to leave office and the vice president takes over, the 25th Amendment allows the vice president to nominate someone
yes.
to become president.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But, and here's the kicker... It doesn't work like a judgeship or a cabinet post. It is
right.
not simply ratified by the Senate.
Huh.
It must also be approved by the House.
Ah, okay.
So now imagine President yes. Pence, temporary President Pence,
mm-hmm.
having to choose a vice president acceptable to both Mitch McConnell
mm-hmm.
and Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
And that's where you get into cognitive dissonance.
Right. And I think that that ruling or that specific rule also comes into how some people are, you know, hoping that Nancy Pelosi can somehow swing an impeachment situation to become president herself.
Well, there is a non-zero possibility that Pelosi could end up being president out of this, because if Trump is impeached and convicted, and if Pence, possibly before he's elevated to president, is indicted. And apparently there, you know, he has done things that while as president, you might not be able to indict him, but as vice president, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is a non-zero possibility that Pelosi can become president. I wouldn't start putting bank on it.
Right.
But it could happen.
Right.
So, all right. I'm sorry, why Chuck Schumer?
why Chuck Schumer fast-tracked the judge appointments for Trump.
Hmm. Schumer didn't. McConnell did. Well, McConnell fast-tracked them.
Well, then why did McConnell fast-track them?
Because he held them up during Obama's term, left a lot of vacancies, and
right.
Now that he had a hand to sign the ratifications, it's just anybody that Trump nominated pretty much became a lifetime federal appointment.
So it's part of a larger sort of strategy to slowly republicanize the entire government.
And interestingly, that is the thing that I was hoping I could get to, that I've been waiting about 4 months to get to, where the Federalist Society gets involved in this. But, you know, we don't have to do that today. It's not so... I mean, they've been doing it for 30 or 40 years. It'll wait another week.
Tune in next week to see if we get to it.
Tune in next week to see if we get to the Federalist Society and how it's a tax-exempt organization that engages in politics, and those two things should not happen together. Okay, we got three more minutes. Well, let me finish on this ACA thing, and then I can... I can sever that from the Federalist Society thing. That is severable. Hmm. So a three-judge panel in New Orleans, an appeals court, shipped the rest of the law because they felt they could only act on the federal part of the law, the ACA, and they shipped the rest of it back to a Texas district court, and the judge there will have to reassess how much of the ACA can stand without the individual mandate. Now, what's interesting about this is even though the law itself unfortunately accidentally omitted a severability clause, I'm guessing there has been enough Supreme Court action on the ACA where they have, in fact, severed parts of it in spite of the absence of that clause, that they're using that severability either as precedent or guidance.
Hmm.
Of severability within the ACA. The question is, how much can you sever before it becomes an empty, useless shell? And that has been the strategy of the Republicans in order to try to disable, dismember, destroy the Affordable Care Act. Now, of course, what's interesting is a lot of Democrats, I think that there's a perverse hope. Not that they want this to happen.
That's a word you want to hear on radio, perverse.
Perverse. It's legal. It's not a seven-sin word. I think there is a perverse hope among Democrats, some Democrats, that if the ACA is taken down with these deaths of 1,000 cuts by the Republicans, that essentially makes the case for Medicare for All. Because that's legal.
Hmm.
So simply extending, for example... being able to buy in at any age. Mm-hmm. Personally, you know, the majority, and this is sort of obliquely related, you know, the majority of people take their Social Security at 62.
Hmm.
The majority do. Even though most people don't get their full Social Security until they're 66 or 67, depending on when they were born.
Right.
I did some calculations on that. And if you start taking your Social Security at 62, you have to live to at least 77, more or less, before you're theoretically losing money month to month.
Hmm.
And for a male, you're probably not going to get past 77.
Hmm.
At the most, you may get to 80. Hmm. That's statistical. That's not,
yeah.
You know, obviously not universal. But
oh, there are outliers to everything.
Outliers to everything. So my feeling is, and it gets so hard to get a job. If you are jobless at the age of 50 or 55, you are done.
Hmm.
You're either not going to get a job, or you're going to get a job that pays a half or a quarter of what you used to make. And I'm beginning to think that we may, I mean, whatever Andrew Yang is saying about his $1,000 per month to every family, whatever you think about that.
Importantly, that's a different Andrew. That's not me.
Andrew Yang,
Andrew
I said.
Yang, yeah.
Andrew Yang. I do think that you should be able to take some retirement pay at a certain age because it's obvious that you need some kind of subsistence support.
Sure.
Okay. I have managed to fill up all my remaining time with chit-chat and digression. I hope it has been interesting, enjoyable, or at least tolerable. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Andrew Ferguson.
Ferguson, yep. We work together so much we don't even know each other's last name.
Andrew. It's just Andrew.
It's just Andrew.
Andrew Ferguson has been guest co-hosting and may yet again. We'll talk to our program director and
we
see
sure
what
will.
He thinks about this.
We sure will.
Everyone have a great week. Everyone have a great holiday. I will be here live on the 30th. We're not doing a rerun. I stick to this show, baby. You all take care.
See you later.
Where freedom rings and singers sing. Where Robert Earl Keane meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap. R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. Celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.